buzzer has sounded. We are headed to overtime with William Pattison on Fox Sports Knoxville. This is Fan Run Radio.
And here we go. Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios, it's overtime with William Pattison and Dawson Wise joining you on a Wednesday. Plenty to cover, including the Vols kinging Queens in the midweek. A little play on words there.
Solid.
We'll go around the association as well, talk about last night's NBA matchups and the second round of the playoffs. Red Sox and Braves at 7:15 will get you out to Atlanta here in about an hour and 15. But before, stick around with us and we'll get you up to date and clued in all things Tennessee and what's going on in sports. Dawson with the news a little bit later on in hour number two. But first things first, presented by the 37 Club, which provides access to unique content, exclusive events, private communities, and special discounts on Fan Run merchandise. Join on fanrunradio.com today. And if you want to get some really good merchandise, go to Twitter, check out the link. We have a new merch launch. You can get up to 15% off your order and free shipping on orders over $50. Some really good stuff on there. Make sure to rep Fan Run Radio around town. Get you ready for the summer. Get an opportunity to rep some new merch. But today's first things first topic is Tennessee remains king with a win over Queens. Number one Tennessee. That is a pretty good ring to it, right?
Always love to say that.
Number one Tennessee earned a hard-fought 6-3 midweek win over a scrappy Queens team on Tuesday night at Lindsey Nelson Stadium to record its 40th victory of the year. The Volunteers improved to 40-9 on the year, 17-7 in SEC play, have now posted 40 or more wins in each of their last five full seasons, matching the longest such streak in program history, dating back to 1993 to 1997. So what Tony Vitello has done is very impressive, and he joined on The Drive a little bit ago. Really good interview by The Drive guys as well. Make sure to go check that out on the podcast. Talking more about this game, however, Dylan Dreiling came up with the biggest hit of the night, blasting a three-run homer with two outs in the bottom of the seventh to give UT its first lead of the night, 6-3. The Big Orange tied the game at three earlier in the inning on a Billy Amick RBI groundout to set the stage for Dreiling's 15th home run of the year. This was not a perfect game for Tennessee. Last week we played Lipscomb and struggled. Got off to a rough start in this one as well. Tennessee fell into an early hole, down 2-0 after three walks and a hit batter resulted in a pair of Royals runs in the top of the first inning. After Hunter Ensley scored on a wild pitch to get the Vols on the board in the bottom of the fourth, Christian Moore tied the game two later in the frame with an RBI single to left field to score Cannon Peebles. Queens, that's 13-27 on the year. We've talked about kind of playing these midweek matchups, not against the best competition, but as we saw last week with Lipscomb, these are the type of teams that can kind of creep up on you as you're trying to kind of get a feel for the other guys in your lineup, some other pitchers. It's a good opportunity for them to get some experience, but you got to make sure you're playing your best baseball, and Queens came to play. Queens regained the lead with a run in the top of the sixth before the Vols' four-run seventh inning gave them the lead for good. The Royals did make things interesting in the ninth. I will mention loading the bases with no outs before the top three batters in their lineup all struck out swinging in consecutive at-bats to end the game. Aaron Combs came on to record the final two punchdowns and locked down his third save of the season. J.J. Garcia picked up the win after tossing 1.1 innings of work, in which was a shutout for him. Dylan Loy also shined in relief effort for the Big Orange, coming in for starter Marcus Phillips with just one out and the bases loaded in the first inning before tossing a career-high 3.1 scoreless innings with a career-best five strikeouts. Christian Moore, Kavaris Tears were the only two UT players to finish the night with multiple hits, recording two apiece while also scoring a run. Good to see Kavaris Tears back in the lineup. Missed him in Gainesville. It seemed to be a day-to-day when we were talking about it on Friday as the game was going on. Seemed to be a day-to-day. Good to get him back in the midweek, kind of get him back going. This is another kind of – it was kind of a scary game for a little bit because you look up at the scoreboard and you're like, okay, you know, when is this offense going to pick back up where they left off on Saturday in Gainesville where you had an 11-run inning and one of their best offensive performances of the year. But look, you know, it's, again, the midweek games, a lot of people kind of overlook it. I think the Vols kind of settled in that sixth inning. We're like, look, we can't repeat what we did last week with Lipscomb. We've got to get this thing going. And that's exactly what they were able to do and get the win for their 40th on the year. Dawson, your takeaways from the game.
Well, you got the job done. I think that's the most important. Yeah, look, it's not your flashy run rule victory that we're used to in the midweek, but it's better than a loss, which is what we were talking about here last week on Wednesday. So, like, anything's better than losing the ball game. Sometimes it's not that simple. Sometimes these teams, despite their record, Queens was 12-36 going into last night's game.
Yeah.
And still, it's college baseball. I talked about it last week. I talked about it the week before. College baseball's a tough sport.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of parity. Baseball is a sport that you have a couple bad bounces, a couple bad pitches, you're losing the ball game. That's kind of what happened to Tennessee last night. I thought they played well, just found themselves in a couple bad spots.
Sure.
Glad to still come away with a victory. It featured adversity. This team kind of needs that. Just continue to overcome adversity. The pitching's going to be fine is another one of my takeaways. They got battered last week against Lipscomb. The young guys did. But last night, a recovery for the most part. Dylan Loy looked very good. J.J. Garcia looked very good. The brightest spots of the night. And just told us, hey, take a breath. This group is going to be fine. And these guys, they're still continuing to grow. They're still continuing to develop, kind of find their way in college baseball. They're going to be A-OK. And then my final takeaway, and credit to the guys before us, the drive, they've coined the fan run effect. They talked about Drew Beam comes on the drive, has a great performance in Gainesville. I said either last week or early this week that Dylan Dreiling was the unsung hero of the lineup. Kind of that guy that's not going to get mentioned as much as a Burke or a Simo. He hits the game-winning home run last night.
Yeah.
And kind of proves me right in that he's been, you know, the guy outside those top four. He gets the biggest hit of the night, puts you in the lead for good. When everything else felt like, okay, this is not going well. Guys have hits, but we're just not doing very much. Dreiling gives you that spark. Gives the Vols some very timely clutch hitting.
Yeah, steps up to the plate. No pun intended there. Christian Moore, want to talk about him real quick. Extended his on-base streak to 13 straight games last night after reaching base in four of his five plate appearances, recording two singles and a pair of walks. Talking about him, because a couple weeks ago we were asked, you know, who's the most important player on this team? Or you know, for a deep run, if you could choose one guy, there are plenty of them, but if you could choose one guy, we chose Christian Moore. And, you know, last night, extending his on-base record for 13 games is important, but kind of getting back in rhythm because been a little inconsistent. How important is it for him to continue to build off this momentum after being inconsistent a little bit since Missouri?
It's huge. He's one of the heartbeats of the team.
Yeah.
You just talked about, you know, we all kind of agreed he's the most important player on the team. He can spark the whole lineup to be better. When he goes, this team goes. We've talked about that even before the year started. We said if this team's going to be successful, it's going to come from guys like Christian Moore, the veteran leaders in the clubhouse. You know, you need your anchor guys to go for the lineup to be successful. Great to see him getting back to that. He's improved so much at the plate over the years. So this kind of streak, especially at the last year and a half, was really out of character, really weird. He's really gotten to be, you know, more of a balanced hitter. You know, he had a 340, 350 average at one point this season. And he used to be that boom or bust guy. Either he was going to homer, he was going to hit one in the gap, or he was going to strike out. Now he's gotten to where he doesn't do that as much. And now, even the last week since Missouri, he's been back on top of his game. When the postseason rolls around, you need guys like Christian Moore. If he keeps this up, we'll be in good shape.
Yeah, I know earlier you said that you thought the pitching was fine, or just, you know, not to panic. You know, Marcus Phillips was a guy we gave a lot of credit to a couple weeks ago, a couple of shaky performances from him in the midweek ever since. What were your thoughts on last night's pitching? Obviously, again, you know, you're trying to get guys involved, just trying to get them reps, but some have responded better than others, and I think that was an example last night. What was your takeaway on the pitching?
It was better than last week is kind of what I wrote down. This, you know, this is more the norm for this group. They've been good in the midweek. This is what Tony likes to do. He likes to save these midweek games for your, you know, your mainstay young guys, you know, like a Dylan Loy, like a Marcus Phillips. even if they're not having the best of performances, he's going to run them out there next week, the same the next week, because you need to have those performances.
Yeah.
They help you grow. They help you develop. Marcus Phillips will be fine. It's another off night. It is what it is. It's baseball. It happens.
Yeah.
You know, now several of these guys have really begun to look impressive and kind of bounce back really quickly. For as young as they are, I mean, Dylan Loy had an okay performance last week. Was not great.
Yeah.
But last night, my goodness, I mean, he was outstanding in his three innings of work. You're starting to figure out which of these guys are going to be there for you later in the year, in the postseason especially. I think Dylan Loy is a guy you could bring out of the bullpen in a pretty, you know, clutch spot, a high-intensity spot. J.J. Garcia is starting to put his name in that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Again, we thought Phillips would be there. Another setback for him, but again, I think he'll be okay. Still, you've got several guys that are going to be in that spot. If you need a guy, you know, you burn all your arms in Omaha or Hoover or in a super regional, and you need a guy to come out of the bullpen or start a bullpen game on a back-to-back or something like that, these are those guys. These are those guys you're going to lean on to be that help to your team. If they continue like this, I like several of them to kind of join that conversation as we get closer to the postseason.
Yeah. We'll pivot to the matchup in Nashville this weekend against Vanderbilt here in a second. Let's go ahead and take a call from Joshy. We got Joshy Boy on the line, 865-288-3131, your number if you want to hop in and join. What's up, Joshy?
What's up, guys?
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing well.
Before I get to my call, I just want to send prayers out to everybody tonight. I want everybody to stay safe during the storm.
Yeah, we've got some nasty weather coming.
Do we really?
Tonight. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't even know
so,
that.
Yeah. So my first question, William, is for you, Dawson, and Chase. Do you guys think this series between Denver and Minnesota is over?
I don't think it's over. I mean, if they lose game three, yes. but if the Nuggets have to win game three, if they're able to do that, then
you're saying there's a chance.
There is a chance, Joshy. I think that the Nuggets can get it done. You know, we'll talk more about them as we get closer to game three on Friday. But
Nuggets don't have a bench, though. Come on, unlike last year.
Not as good as last year, correct. But, I mean, their starting five is still capable. I mean, Christian Brown's capable. P.J. Watson is capable. Reggie Jackson's capable. They've got a good enough group. It's just they've been thrown off by the Timberwolves defense, and they've got to pick their spots and go from there.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about this Tennessee baseball team this year? I know we want to focus on the season, but do you guys think they can go far and win the whole thing possibly?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most talented teams in the country. There's a reason why Tennessee's number one right now. When you look at their body of work, they've been one of the best teams in the SEC, just a spot away from being the SEC leader or tied for the SEC leader. Look, I think Tennessee has the offense. I think it's better than years past because they do a better job of getting on base, which is something we've covered a lot on here. You know, a lot of people give strays to the pitching staff, but I think you've seen moments this year out of all of them that give you confidence come the postseason that these guys can play and fill in big moments, like a Kirby Cannell, who's come in multiple times this year in really tough positions and been able to close out a game. I think it's all about getting healthy, and then from that point on, it's you've got the roster that's good enough to be in Omaha and be the last team in Omaha.
Right. I know they made it further last year than they did their first trip to Omaha a few years ago. I think the next step is, can they make it to the championship game in Omaha if they get there?
Well, I think they can make it to the championship. It just depends on who they match up with, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Matchups matter.
I mean, I think there are a couple teams I would not want to face. I know if Tennessee matches up with Wake Forest in a possible super regional or regional, having Chase Burns, that could be a tough situation. But, I mean, look, I think you can't look at it like, okay, if we match up with this team, we're in trouble. I just think you have to put, you know, this is a very talented team. You've got to trust what you've done all year. You've got to trust your offense, one of the most electric in the country, and trust your bullpen that really hasn't been healthy throughout the course of the season. Is that fair?
That's fair.
Yeah, it's fair. And my last question out the door is, what do you think about the job Rand Carthon has done for Mike Titans assembling this year in the offseason with the draft and making some big free agent moves? You guys have a good night.
Yeah, thank you so much for calling in, Joshy. As always, we appreciate it. Yeah, as we talked about yesterday on In the News, I think it was a really good addition. Tyler Boyd, a wide receiver three on most teams in the NFL. So, you know, the Titans having the opportunity to give Will Levis three options, beef up the offensive line a little bit with J.C. Latham, and having two backs, Tony Pollard and Ty-J Spears, who offer a little bit of a different punch, respectfully. So I think this is a good group. As I said yesterday, this gives you the opportunity to see what you have with Will Levis. And you know, I think that's all you can ask, right? I mean, you got the coach. You got a really good offensive line coach and Bill Callahan. You've got the weapons. I think this is just now Will Levis's opportunity to take it away. So we appreciate you calling in, Joshy. Let's pivot real quick to – I guess we'll head back to the phones here. We'll head back to the phones. We'll talk Tennessee Vanderbilt here in a minute. Let's head back to the phones. We have Tennessee Bruce on the line. What's up, Tennessee Bruce?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. How are you?
Awesome. Just a couple of things, and I guess this is in reference to last night's call or last night's show. A little bit of a short conversation and a little bit of a funny, but I heard y'all talking about a coach by the name of Hugh Freeze and how the fact y'all trusted him. I don't know if you ought to be trusting him for sure.
Okay. Well, we trust his football knowledge. Maybe not trusting him outside of football.
Trust him on the field.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah, on the field, but not in the locker room.
Yeah, that's my short funny. But here's what I was going to talk to you about. So, you know, still referencing last night's show in football, I personally think there's going to be a lot of disappointment within the league. I think the league is going to be so difficult, and the traditional runs for the Roses, it's just not going to be there. You got too many really good teams this year coming up. I mean, my number one person or team right off the bat is Texas, followed by, I mean, I'm hopeful that Tennessee could be in the top three. And that goes back to disappointment. I don't know if they can, but I think Josh Heupel is pressured to the amount of season tickets that the university has sold. With the new quarterback, he's got a lot of pressure to really push hard and to grab these wins. Any comments on the difficulty of the schedules for all of these teams, and maybe Josh in general?
Well, the schedules are difficult for almost everybody. I mean,
yeah,
there's not really anybody in the SEC that has an easy schedule this year. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you on that. Now, I will say I feel like there's less pressure now that the playoff is no longer four teams. Now it's 12. You could probably see, four teams at least from the SEC, and considering strength of schedule and the teams they're going to play, I mean, you could see at least four teams in that 12-team playoff. So the pressure is, it's there for sure with a new quarterback and all the fans and things like that, but I think it's less than it used to be.
Yeah, I think there's pressure every year. I mean, and obviously adding Texas and Oklahoma makes, you know, the rich richer. This is by far the best conference in college football. You know, the Big Ten adds Oregon and USC and UCLA, but, you know, that's not moving the needle as much for me, because when you look at the bottom half of that conference, it's not very good. There are only three or four SEC teams going into next year that you could really say are not that good. Because the middle pack of the SEC is very competitive and could be anyone on any given day. So I think there's always pressure, and I think that the conference now is very competitive. But as Dawson alludes to, there are 12 teams that make the playoff now, a little bit more wiggle room, and they'll respect the best teams from the SEC that are playing some of the best teams in the country, you know, week in and week out. Talking about Josh Heupel, I do think there's a lot of pressure on the fact that this is probably the most anticipated season Tennessee has had since 2016. The 2022 year, you knew you had Hendon Hooker, but, you know, you're coming off a year where you just won, what, 7 or 8 games the year before, lost in the Music City Bowl. The expectation was, okay, let's maybe get 10 wins, or maybe let's get 9 wins. Maybe let's beat, like, you know, one of our rivals in maybe Florida or Alabama. You're able to do both. So I think the 2022 year is a little bit more of a shock. This year, the expectations are there. It's college football playoffs at 12. We've got Nico Imaliava. We've got one of the best defensive fronts in the country. We have the number one player defensively in the country. There's a lot of pressure, so I do understand that. But look, Josh Heupel, when he accepted this job, Tennessee, the pressure as a coach at Tennessee is probably the highest of any job in the country. You know, there's a big expectation, big fan base, big funding. If you don't do well, then, you know, you'll be shown the door pretty quickly. So I think there's always pressure, but I do agree that this year there's a lot at stake this year.
Okay. And then one last comment, and I'll hang up and listen. But this is in reference to the NBA. So a little sentimental on my side. I'm very disappointed and maybe a little bit hurt that Grant Williams is not playing for the Boston Celtics. I really don't know what happened to him, why he got traded, or if he asked to be traded, and then who in fact took his place that could possibly be doing better than he was doing last year. And so we thank you.
We appreciate your call, Tennessee Bruce, as always. So Grant Williams was not traded away from Boston. He signed a contract with the Dallas Mavericks. They gave him a fair amount of money, and the fit didn't really work in Dallas, so they traded him to Charlotte, where he's from. But Boston, in his placement, was able to go snag Kristaps Porzingis and was able to go snag Drew Holiday instead of having to pay Grant Williams what they would have used that money for Kristaps and Drew. So there's not really a bona fide replacement. When you look at the roster the Celtics have, I mean, their starting five is, you know, Kristaps, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Drew Holiday, Al Horford. I guess the guy off the bench for them would be Derek White, who just put up 8 threes in a playoff game a couple of weeks ago. Sam Hauser, another 3-point shooter. And Luke Kornet plays a little bit. He had to play last night because of Porzingis' injury, but there's not really a bona fide replacement for Grant Williams. It was more of a money thing that they couldn't afford to add Kristaps Porzingis, add Drew Holiday, and keep Grant Williams, who had a really impressive time in Boston and as a result was paid by Dallas. All right, when we come back, we'll talk about Tennessee and Vanderbilt, give you a little bit of a sneak peek into the series before we head to Around the Association when we return on Overtime.
Ever been the coach who realized the team's gear just wasn't up to par? Well, if I'm being honest, that was me. Just a downright irresponsible and plain bad coach. Then SM Athletics changed the game. I want you to picture this. I walk into their store, a coach with a vision. SM Athletics didn't just see a coach. They saw a team's potential. And they delivered custom uniforms so striking. Our team spirit soared. From cutting-edge apparel to top-notch equipment, SM Athletics transformed our presence. No more unreliable online orders or envying the other team's style. SM Athletics stands for quality, design, and on-time delivery every time. Coaches, elevate your team with SM Athletics. Call 865-966-3434 or visit smathletics.com. Get the best for your team, delivered right and on time. So, elevate your team's game by contacting SM Athletics today.
Are you ready to play hard and work harder? Are you looking to take the next step in your career with a company who celebrates hard work and appreciates those who do it? Then it's time to join the movement at Axel Logistics. Axel is looking to expand their award-winning sales team with logistics consultants who are outgoing, ambitious, and thrive in a fast-paced environment. If that sounds like you, visit axellogistics.com to learn more. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Fan Run Radio. Axel Logistics, now is your time.
Who's ready to watch your Southern League champs take the field for a fantastic 2024 season? All season long, your favorite nights are back, like Star Wars, Margaritaville, 4th of July, UT Night, and so much more. And don't forget, awesome daily promotions too, like All You Can Eat Wednesday, Thirsty Thursday, Summer Fireworks Series, and Family Fun Day Sunday. Get your tickets for your favorite night now at SmokiesBaseball.com. Tennessee Smokies.
Looking for a luxury RV getaway? Then come see Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Just imagine a personal oasis on the French Broad River with outstanding amenities just minutes from the Great Smoky Mountains. Enjoy the quiet, private setting on sites offering unexpected beauty and tranquility. Unplug from everyday life and plug in to the serenity of life on the river, big mountain skies, and bucket list sunsets at Two Rivers Landing RV Resort. Serenity in the heart of it all. Visit tworiversrvresort.com.
The Atlanta Braves are back with a loaded roster of young talent and some new faces in the A. It's going to be another wild season.
3-1 hit high in the air to deep center field. Nimmo's going to go back to the track. Here it comes. Home run right over the wall.
105.7 FM, 1340 AM. Online at fanrunradio.com and streaming on the free Fan Run Radio app, Fan Run Radio. Big Orange Country's radio home of the Atlanta Braves.
7:30 in the night.
All right, back here on Overtime. Getting goosebumps for this next segment. I really had no idea about the tornadoes tonight. I woke up this morning at a late time, but I think it's because of the rain this morning. You know, waking up to rain, it's very soothing. It's hard to wake up.
Yeah.
And also, I've got a – so I don't have blinds or – I've got blinds, but they don't really close all the way.
Okay.
And I don't have curtains. So my invention is putting a blanket over the
– I did the same thing.
Yeah, so that covers most of it, but usually if it's like sunny out, I'll still be able to wake up because it shines through.
It was gross this morning.
It was. So anyway, I just don't. I feel like does Knoxville get tornadoes?
We had one like last year in the middle of the night, like 4:30 in the morning, that was over in the Cedar Bluff area. But that's the last one. That's the only one I can remember. And I've been living here for almost 4 years.
That's so. What I'm saying. Because so I'm from Memphis, and it's kind of like tornado central, like Arkansas, Kansas, Memphis, and it usually, knock on wood, is stopped by the Mississippi River. If for some reason, it kind of like changes its trajectory there. I don't know why, but it always has. So it's never really hit Memphis. But I mean, I remember there's like a certain time of year. It's the spring and like October,
yep,
where like Memphis was always, we'd have like two or three tornadoes. Tornado watches, tornado warnings, like a year during that time frame. I never thought Knoxville had them. I just thought we were so high up here.
It does not happen very often. That's for sure.
Yeah. Anyway, all right. Let's talk about Tennessee and Vanderbilt this weekend. Tennessee makes a short drive west for an in-state showdown at number 25 / not ranked Vanderbilt, depending on what site you're looking at, this weekend in Nashville. Friday night series opener is slated to begin at 7 p.m. Eastern time and will be streamed on SEC Network Plus and the ESPN app, which means you'll log in and be told that you can't watch it due to unauthorization.
Exactly, yeah.
Games 2 and 3 of the series will feature national TV broadcast on the SEC Network and ESPN2, so at least you'll get to watch two of them. Talking about what's at stake this weekend, we covered earlier in the week on Monday after Tennessee was granted the number one overall ranking in the country, and also Arkansas dropped a couple of games this weekend. The opportunity to win the SEC regular season title is at stake this weekend. Obviously, you know, if you win all three games, you don't win it. But as we get closer and closer to the end of the year, you have to continue to win as many games as you can because, you know, you can only control what you can control. If Kentucky and Arkansas lose their series this weekend, then Tennessee has the opportunity to take the crown. And you need to continue that, very similar in basketball, how you had to have a couple losses from teams, and you also had to beat some teams, and Tennessee basketball was able to do that. Now Tennessee baseball has the same opportunity. What's at stake this weekend for the Vols?
In-state supremacy, number one. You always want to beat your in-state rival.
Yeah.
No matter how they're playing, this is still a competitive series. It's still a heated series. In-state bragging rights on the line. You know Vandy's going to get up for this series in their home ballpark. You've got to match that. You've got to be fired up. You've got to be ready to go from the jump in game one in what should be, you'd imagine, a raucous environment in Nashville. Yeah. I know Vandy is not the team they usually are, but when Tennessee comes to town, that place gets up. So you know, you're on for in-state supremacy. Keeping pace in the SEC, you want to keep pace in the regular season standings. We said they probably need 4 to 6 wins the next two weekends to kind of keep pace with Kentucky and Arkansas in the conference. So win the series, stay in the hunt, keep yourself in the conversation, and pace with at least the Wildcats. Obviously, we'll see how Arkansas's last two series go. Mm-hmm. They got a tough one next weekend against A&M.
Yeah.
You gotta be able to hold down the fort, take care of your business, and win the series. I mean, you got to start thinking about national seeding.
Yeah.
The field of 64 is taking shape, and you want to situate yourself as one of these top seeds. You don't want to be the 8 seed, 9 seed in the country. That's going to be the toughest regional. It's going to be the toughest super regional. You want to go in as one of these top 4 seeds, sit where you are right now, and have a little bit easier path to get yourself back to Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
But to do that, you need to keep winning games if you want to be in a high seed in a tournament like this. So go on the road, take care of some business, and get yourself situated that way as well.
So I know you're not going to be with us tomorrow or Friday, so I want to give you the opportunity to kind of give your keys to this weekend's matchup. We'll dive into it more on Thursday and Friday here on Overtime, but want to give you the opportunity to give your takes and your keys to the weekend.
Well, you're going to have to do some work being the road team. Vanderbilt is not the same team on the road as they are at home. They're a much better team at home. The Vandy pitching staff allowed at least 10 runs in each of their last three games on the road in Georgia. They've only given up 8-plus runs in one of their SEC home games this season instead of 10 of their 12 road games. They've given up 8-plus runs. So a very different team at home, but still not a good pitching staff. I mean, some of these statistics. No starter this weekend went deeper than 3 innings for Vanderbilt. 35 runs, 31 hits, 22 walks, 9 hit batters, and only 12 strikeouts over the course of a weekend.
Yeah.
As a staff, no matter road or home, that's not a good statistic.
No.
This is not a great staff. So you got to be able to get to that staff in a ballpark that they're a lot more comfortable playing in. Control the base paths in terms of pitching. Vanderbilt is not a home run hitting team. They are a lot more about getting guys on, running, hitting around, getting mm-hmm. guys on base with singles, doubles, walks. They know how to put it in play. They got 4 guys over 300, but their home run leader is Alan Espinal. He only has 9 on the year. If you're the Vols pitchers, you got to be able to limit base runners. That's how Vandy does their damage. Got to have another good pitching weekend this weekend as well. And, look, keep the momentum going for the bats. Vandy, 5 pitchers with an ERA under 4. That's it. Mm-hmm. 1 with an ERA below 3. I imagine it's one of the starters we'll see this weekend. This is another step, not on the elite level. A lot of guys at ERAs of 5.5, 6, 6.5 that have allowed a ton of home runs. Considering those stats, keep the momentum going, get the bats going, quiet that environment. That's going to be big as well. Take control of the environment early and take advantage of what has been a very subpar Vanderbilt team this year.
Yeah. Vanderbilt historically has always had a really good baseball club. And we've seen a couple of teams this year in the SEC, like a Florida, like a Vanderbilt, even a little bit Mississippi State too, teams that have had really good runs over the last decade and now kind of have poor teams. There's talent on the roster, but they're underperforming, I should say. What do you think is wrong with Vanderbilt this season?
I'm not sure. I'm wondering if it's partly because the rest of the SEC has caught up. Because in some of these years, that Vanderbilt's winning championships – back in the Dansby Swanson years.
Sure.
Tennessee was not what they are now. Georgia was not what they are now. Florida was, but, that was about it. Arkansas was, but you didn't have Texas A&M at number 1 in the country. Mm-hmm. You didn't have Kentucky at number 2 in the country at times. You didn't have teams like LSU that were good every single year now, like they are now, and a good hitting team.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's mostly just the rest of the conference has caught up, and it was bound to happen eventually. But, man, the SEC went from Vanderbilt, Arkansas, and Florida to you've got about 8 teams
yeah.
that can be really good and mm-hmm. make the NCAA tournament. So the rest of the conference got better, and Vanderbilt just has kind of stayed the same.
Yeah. A reminder, the Fan Run merch store is finally live. 15% off the first week with code FANRUN4THEWIN. That's code FANRUN4, the letter 4, or I guess the number 4, I should say. FANRUN4THEWIN. And free shipping on orders over $50 with code free shipping, and 37 club members, you have a special code for 25% off in our Discord and soon an email. Make sure to go check it out, fanrunradio.com. Let's head over to the association. A couple of games last night in the NBA. The Boston Celtics easily handled the Cleveland Cavaliers in game 1, even with an off night from superstar centerpiece Jason Tatum. Meanwhile, the Dallas Mavericks were blown out after their superstar, Luka Doncic, struggled against the Oklahoma City Thunder. The Thunder's game one win over the Mavericks flipped in the middle of the third quarter. Coach Dane Antolt quickly subbed in Isaiah Joe for Josh Giddey after the Mavericks cut a 9-point halftime lead to one. Coming into Tuesday, the Mavericks hadn't won a game one in four series with Jason Kidd as the head coach. Last night extends to five. Giddey does a ton for the Thunder, but his presence and crunches, his presence kind of crunches the floor up. He's not a great three-point shooter, and his jumper was way off last night. Isaiah Joe, a floor spacer, a three-pointer on his first possession in the game. Lou Dort, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren flowed with the threes as well, part of a 14-4 run. Really broke the game away for Oklahoma City. Takeaways from last night include that stretch. I thought that was very pivotal. And you got to give credit to the Thunder coaching staff. This is a young team. This is a young coaching staff. The ability to recognize an in-game adjustment like that, take Josh Giddey out, put Isaiah Joe in, I mean, totally changed the retrospect of the game. The other thing, Dallas. I didn't expect them to win last night, but I thought they'd play a little bit better. Luka Doncic, his injury, I think, is key because he's not looking like the same player. One point last night in the fourth quarter, he was 4-for-14. That's not the Luka Doncic that we know, and that's not the Luka Doncic that is up for an MVP candidacy, which gets revealed in, I think, about 20 minutes here. But, you know, my takeaway is they've got to get a better version of Luka. And if they're not able to, the Thunder have the personnel defensively and have the coaching staff to now make these in-game adjustments despite being so young. The Mavericks, I think, have to get one in game two on the road to kind of throw this younger team off. What are your takeaways?
Yeah, the first one is the young stars continue to impress. Look, we kind of talked about, you know, would this young core be able to deal with the pressure of the playoffs? So we all kind of figured they'd crumble either in the first round or the second round. I called them contenders. I'd like to put that on the record. And when we did pretender or contender in the West back in, I don't even know, March, I think, I said the Thunder were contenders. And you guys, I think, disagreed with me, if I remember correctly. So let's put that out there right quick. Yeah. No, but in all seriousness, look, Shai, Chet, Jalen Williams, they've surprised me. They've done more than I thought they would do in the playoffs, and they've been able to maintain that regular season production, Shai especially. I mean,
yeah,
he was outstanding again. I figured they'd flame out maybe a little bit, not, you know, come back to earth maybe. They haven't. They proved me wrong. Unlikely heroes. Aaron Wiggins, 16 off the bench.
Yeah.
I think I'd be saying that last night.
Yeah.
The other Jalen Williams, which it's funny to note, if you go look at the Thunder roster, they do have two Jalen Williams on their team.
Yeah.
Jalen, J-A-Y-L-I-N, with 11 off the bench. Isaiah Joe, you talked about him coming in. He was a presence as well. Lou Dort, we'll talk about in a minute. Defensively, I thought he was excellent.
He's always good.
But I thought he was really excellent on Luka last night. We'll talk about that in a minute. We often talk about, you know, playoff heroes are the other guys, right? The role guys. That's what the Thunder got last night. It was a great performance from some of their other guys. And then the Mavericks didn't get enough from their stars. That was not Luka Doncic that has lived in Suns fans' nightmares for the last 2 years after that series a couple years ago.
Yeah.
They were a lot of the reason – Kyrie and Luka were a lot of the reason the Clippers lost to the Mavericks.
Uh-huh.
I mean, late in that series, the Mavericks' offense exploded around Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving. If they go, Dallas goes. If they don't, Dallas does not.
Yeah.
They didn't go, so Dallas did not, and they did not look good at all. 39 combined, not going to cut it against a young core like Oklahoma City, and it showed last night. They need to sort this out and sort it out quickly.
Yeah, so, you know, I mentioned the stat that they've lost every game won under Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
On one hand, Dallas came back to win three of those four series, so that's good. The team has shown an ability to adjust in the ensuing games to close a series like we saw against Los Angeles, but there's no on-floor adjustment who can fix the team's primary concern stemming from Tuesday's defeat, and that's Luka Doncic, who was far from his usual self. Played like Duka Doncic, not Luka Doncic. And it goes back to the injury. I think it's the reasoning for this play, because when you look at him in warmups, his right knee is heavily wrapped up. You saw it in the Clippers series, constantly fidgeting with the brace. I think it's kind of thrown him off, and Richard Jefferson has talked about it before, a former NBA player now with ESPN, how kind of putting on gear like that, if you're not used to it, can kind of throw you off because it kind of messes up your rhythm. So I think that is a little bit of it, and Luka's not able to play as free-flowing because he's got that brace on and heavily wrapped up leg. But, you know, at the end of the day, if they want to win the series, he's got to be better with the brace on. So, I mean, there's nothing he can do about it. He's got to wear it. He's got to play better. Is Luka's injury the reasoning for his disappointing play, or is it something else?
It could be. Look, he also took a bump early in that game and ended up hobbled the rest of the night. It was really early. It was in the first quarter. He kind of took a tumble, and then after he got up, he was hobbling the rest of the game. So whatever he'd already been dealing with, seems like it got worse after this bump that happened early in the game. You could see why that would hinder him offensively, at least for one night, especially against a really good defensive team in Oklahoma City. But, again, I go back to I owe some credit to Lu Dort and the defense that they played on Luka last night. He played with a lot of energy, challenged Luka quickly, which is what he's good at out on the perimeter. Cason Wallace got some reps on Luka, played well at times. Chet was able to close down the interior. You know Luka loves to go to the interior, and Chet shut it down. So, the injury is going to get coverage, but I think some more credit is also owed to the Oklahoma City defense, especially Lu Dort. Really great performance by him last night.
Yeah, I've always loved Lu Dort. I mean, this Thunder team has kind of been in the making since the bubble.
Right.
Where they went down to the wire with that Rockets team with James Harden and Chris Paul.
Yeah.
And Russell Westbrook as well. Chris Paul was playing for the Thunder, but they went down to the wire in that series with James Harden and Russell Westbrook back when they were still remotely in their prime. And, you know, it took game seven is what the Thunder took him to. But you had that defense from Lu Dort, who was all over James Harden in that series. And Lu Dort has gotten better every year defensively. I think he's one of the most underrated defenders in the league. And you saw that once again last night. Game two, I think, is going to be a pivotal one for Dallas. And if the Thunder want to possibly put this team away, I think winning two at home, makes it an opportunity for them to win at least steal one on the road, which I think they can do. I think it's very important Dallas gets it done in game two. When we come back, we'll give our best bets of the night and also talk about the Cavs and Celtics results from last night when we return here on Overtime.
At First Bank, we're proud of more than 100 years of financial strength. But on game days, our numbers look even better. When they're lighting up a scoreboard printed on a jersey or in bold type on the sports page. We know there's strength in numbers and nothing stronger than the bonds formed around local teams. And the return on this investment? Neighbors coming together again year after year. Bank where community is number one. First Bank. Bank local. Get more team spirit. Member FDIC.
Your Southern League champs, Tennessee Smokies, are back home next week, and every night is huge! Weekly promotions Tuesday through Thursday, and then Pirates take over the ballpark on Friday. Saturday night, it's halfway to Halloween, so let's celebrate Smokey style. And Sunday is our day game of the week with Family Fun Day Sunday. What a week! Get your tickets now at smokiesbaseball.com. Tennessee Smokies!
Hey guys, it's Logan Quinton from the 920 Podcast and Fan Run Varsity Spotlight. Yes, it's the Cookie Man, and I'm here to tell you about something sweet. Crumbled Cookies is the fastest growing cookie company in the nation. After only 4 years, 500 plus stores are in operation in 50 states, with many more in build out. Just a reminder to go see the Crumbled crew at Parkside Drive or Clinton Highway. And please, come check out the new location in Maryville, 1765 West Broadway, Suite C.
Fan Run Radio is proud to present the 37 Club, an exclusive community of the lifeblood of Fan Run Radio. You, our biggest supporters. With a membership to the 37 Club, you receive exclusive content like podcasts, blogs, and videos, giveaways, and access to exclusive merchandise and events. So join the 37 Club today by going to fanrunradio.com.
All right, back here on Overtime. Time for our best bets of the night. Pacers and Knicks set to tip off at, what is it, 7 o'clock tonight?
Something like that, yeah.
Standalone NBA playoff game tonight. I'm going to go under 219 tonight. In game one, we saw a very high-scoring performance. The over smashed. It was 209, so now the line is adjusted to 219. I expect tonight to be a little bit more of a defensive battle. I know these are two really good offensive teams. The Pacers, one of the best in the league. The Knicks were able to respond in game one. I think tonight will be a little bit more dictated by the Knicks and the pace they want to play, a little bit slowed down. And I think the Pacers will make an adjustment as well, realizing that, okay, if we want to run with these guys, it also favors Jalen Brunson. I think we'll be a slower tempo tonight. I'm going under 219.
So that's your only one tonight?
Yeah.
All right, I've got two. Only one NBA game, so I went a little bit wild. We're going to do a four-leg parlay tonight.
Oh, my goodness.
This Knicks game. Josh Hart, 15-plus points. Fair, 24 in game one. Brunson, 6-plus assists. He hit that number in game one. Halliburton, 10-plus assists. He was at 8 in game one. And then Miles Turner, 2-plus threes. Kind of a smaller play. These are all, you know, relatively small odds on these, but only one game. You have to get a little bit creative.
There you go.
But again, Hart, 24 game one. Brunson, 6 assists. Halliburton, 8 assists. Turner hit 2 threes in game one. Again, it might be a defensive battle. I'm staying away from the points because I don't, you know, both teams are going to adjust on that. I don't want to do that. And the spread is still in this series, with as wild as it's been, I don't want to touch that either. So I like that as a wild four-leg parlay tonight. One more time, Hart 15-plus, Brunson 6 assists, Halliburton 10 assists, Turner 2 threes. Then we're going to the MLB because we got the Braves coming up at 720. Braves minus 1.5 tonight and the under 8.5. The Braves really good at home this year. Slumping recently overall. Had a really bad road trip last week, but came back for a 4-2 victory last night over Boston on home field. Two good pitchers again tonight. Nick Pivetta for Boston has a sub-1 ERA on the year. Now, not many opportunities, only two starts so far. But Chris Sale will go for Atlanta tonight. I think a 3.3 ERA, so right hovering right around that 3 number. He'll get a little bit of help on home cooking tonight as well. Another low-scoring contest tonight, but the Braves' home field advantage gives them the edge for me.
Yeah, Braves get the win last night 4-2 after returning home. Chris Sale going up against his former team,
yeah.
The Red Sox. A fun little storyline there. All right, those are our best bets of the night. We'll get you out to Atlanta here in about, 35 minutes? 30,
yeah,
35 minutes.
Something like that.
Trying to do some quick math here, and we're sports guys, not math guys.
Well.
all right, let's talk about the Celtics and Cavs real quick before we head to a break. The Cavs needed to do something to get Darius Garland going since Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley can't play much better offensively than they did in game one. Mitchell with 33, Evan Mobley with 17 and 13. On the other end of the floor, Joe Mazzulla had the ideal scenario through Tatum. Though Tatum struggled, Jaylen Brown, Derek White polished it up 32 and 25 apiece. Your takeaways from this game, and also, you know, are the Celtics just too well-rounded in this one?
Well, to me, the Cavs appear to suffer from a lack of energy. We talked about that yesterday. You know, would they be able to show up after a Game 7 on Sunday? A hard-fought one, no less, and it felt like they just didn't have the gas, didn't have the juice. Boston was more well-rested and on home floor. That's going to make it tough. I mean, playing in the Garden against Boston is tough anyway,
yeah.
Especially on 2 days' rest coming off of Game 7. Felt like the Cavs ran out of juice a little bit in that game. The Celtics got more from the other guys, like we talked about the Thunder,
yeah.
And Mavericks. Drew Holiday had 14. He had a nice night. Peyton Pritchard had 16 and 25 from now notable playoff hero Derek White. I mean, what is going on in this postseason with Derek White? He outscores Jason Tatum last night. He has 25. Tatum went for 18. But seriously, Boston able to get more production from those guys than the Cavs got from their role players, and it went a long way. It won them the game. And now the ultimate takeaway for me, the Celtics are still the surefire best team in the East, and I don't think it's close. Boston wins in blowout fashion despite only 18 points from Jason Tatum.
Yeah.
The fact that you can win by 25 points without Jason Tatum scoring more than 20 should scare the rest of the league. That is terrifying to think about, that your star was your third leading scorer last night on home floor, and they don't need him to have those big nights to be able to win games. They can still win with those modest performances. As for whether they're too well-rounded, it feels that way. They've got everything that you need to win these games. They've got two big stars. You've got the role player production from guys like White and Pritchard and Porzingis when he's playing. Obviously, he's hurt right now. I'm drawing a blank on this. Drew Holiday as well. They've got that production and the defensive prowess to just shut you down and outpace you. I don't see a weakness on this Boston team yet. At least I haven't, and so far in the playoffs.
No.
If there is, I mean, we haven't seen it. Every time, you know, Jason Tatum has an off night, Jaylen Brown has an off night, somebody steps up, whether that's Porzingis or apparently it's going to be Derek White for the remainder of the playoffs. If somebody's injured, somebody steps up. Again, we talked about guys getting minutes in place of Kristaps Porzingis last night. They always have an answer. If something seems to go awry, they've always got an answer, and it always works. And defensively, they wear you down. They're kind of like we talked about South Carolina women's basketball. That's the Boston Celtics.
Mm-hmm.
They run away with games because they wear you down. When it gets late, they keep the foot on the pedal and they pull away. They did it last night and won by a large margin.
Yeah, you know, you talk about winning by a large margin. The Celtics opening these 20-point leads have kind of become a nightly occurrence for this team. And it didn't stop against a Cavs team that is healthy. You know, in round one, Miami's missing Jimmy Butler. You know, they're missing Jaime Jaquez. And that team wasn't good already. But now you're missing one of your key role pieces and your best player in Jimmy Butler. So last night was a shock to see that Boston is still able to blow out a team like the Cavs that are fully healthy and have their second unit in the game by, you know, the second half and by the third quarter, fourth quarter. So I feel like I don't think the Cavs have enough shooting to continue to hold with this Celtics team. And that was my takeaway yesterday going into the game. I was like, look, if the Cavs can shoot well from three, then I give them a chance. But the Cavs don't have the personnel like the Celtics have to get it done. And you have a performance from Jason Tatum where he goes 7 of 19 from the field, only 18 points. Oh, but Jaylen Brown and Derek White rounded out, combining for 57 points. No Kristaps Porzingis either. So where does the line get drawn of, okay, the Celtics are just this good, and even when Jason Tatum doesn't play well and even when Kristaps Porzingis doesn't play, this team is still able to dominate a fully healthy Cavs team. So I think the Celtics are too well-rounded. They've been my pick to win the NBA title before the playoffs began. Now, I had Nuggets Celtics, and I know that's chalk, but the Celtics, in my opinion, match up against any team in the league because Kristaps Porzingis allows you to space the floor, and when you get production from Derek White with 25 points, you know, that's a guy coming off the bench scoring more than half the guys that are starting for the other team. So the Celtics, I think, just have too good of an 8-man rotation. I think that's very key come playoff time. How good is your 8-to-9-man rotation? How good are those guys? How consistent are those guys? Because the Lakers had a really good 8-9-man rotation. Problem is, they weren't consistent.
Right.
And now you're seeing a little bit of that with Denver because Denver's got a good 8-9-man rotation. But, you know, you've got Jamal Murray putting up tour dates and, you know, turning the ball over too many times. And then your guys like Christian Brown, who were big last year as a piece, as a 9 or 10 on that roster, now kind of having to play in that 7-8 slot, aren't necessarily consistent enough. So that's why I think the Celtics are the best team because they're the most well-rounded. Something to add?
Yeah, I was going to ask. So better matchup for the Celtics, or I will say worse. So like a team that matches up better against Boston, Denver or Minnesota?
Denver, Minnesota.
I think the way they're playing right now, it's Minnesota.
It's Minnesota because of the length. But Denver has a length too, is the thing. But the problem is, if you're going like specific matchups, I'd rather have Gobert out on, or I'd rather have Jokic out on Porzingis because he's more mobile.
That's fair.
Gobert, I mean, obviously, just one defensive player, the defensive player of the year, William. What the hell are you talking about? but he thrives down low.
Yeah.
You bring him outside, now he's no longer able to be a threat like he has been all year. So I like Jokic's mobility in that possible matchup. But you're seeing in this Timberwolves series that their ability to swarm defensively has been really good. You could use Naz Reid though, Naz Reid off the bench and put Porzingis, you know, against Porzingis. So you could go both ways, I'd say probably the safe answer right now is the T-Wolves, because what we've seen so far in this series against a team like Denver that has a championship pedigree, has the length and size too, but the Timberwolves have dominated this series because of their ability to defend and have length around the perimeter. I think that'd be the tougher matchup for Boston. All right, when we come back, we'll have In the News with Dawson Wise and get you ready for the Red Sox at the Braves at 7:20 when we return here on Overtime.